Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Ithaca, home of New York's craft cider. I love New York. Plan your getaway at visitithaca.com.
This is Meant to be Eaten, the Gastronomica podcast on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Paula Johnson, your host for today. This episode is part of a series in collaboration with Gastronomica, the Journal for Food Studies. Our fall 2021 issue on global gastropolitics features articles on taste, ingredients, palates, and power from different times and places. Join hosts like me from the journal's editorial collective as we speak with authors. My guest this week is Steven Velasquez. Steve is a curator at the Smithsonian Institution's National Museum of American History in the Division of Cultural and Community Life. Full disclosure here, Steve and I are professional colleagues. We're both curators on the museum's food history team. He joins us today to discuss art and activism, based on his piece in our fall 2021 issue, Stirring the Pot, Calendario de Comida, 1976, Chicano Art as Food Activism, appears in Gastronomica 21.3. Thank you for joining us, Steve, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Sure. So, Steve, I'd like to start by asking if you would briefly tell listeners about what you do as a Smithsonian curator and your current areas of research at the American History Museum.
Well, as a curator at American History, the American History Museum, my role is to do research on topics, translate that research into museum exhibits or museum programs, and create learning goals and objectives for visitors to see exhibits and to learn something and to start to have conversations about some of these topics in American history. Many of my projects revolve around Latino history, the Latino experience, and I do that through looking at collections and topics of everyday life, food activism, food labor, immigration, cultural history. Our museum is pretty big, and that topics that I work on kind of cross every division, every research topic that we have at the museum. So I get to work with a lot of colleagues and try to create really interdisciplinary exhibits that are really engaging.
Great. Thanks. Tell us, if you would, then, about this collection of artworks, the Calendario de Comida, Calendar of Food, and what led you to study and write about it for Gastronomica?
Well, so as a curator working in American history, working on Latino history projects, I ran across a series of images many years ago that featured, these really 1970s colors, bright oranges, bright reds, bright greens, images of food, people preparing food. And I was intrigued by these, but I kind of filed them away in the back of my brain because I didn't have the time or bandwidth to kind of really delve into it. And I found these in collections dealing with other Chicano artists from the 60s and 70s. Fast forward a bit later, and a curator at the Smithsonian American Art Museum was starting to work on a new project about art and activism, especially around the Chicano movement, the Movimiento, the fight for representation and equality that came out in the 60s and 70s. and I learned that she collected these images, and I finally got to see all the images together. And it was it had belonged to a calendar series that was created in 1975, but printed for 1976. You know, 12, 13 images of food that kind of revolved around the Chicano movement and kind of this fight for representation. So I did some preliminary research when we were kind of talking and she was developing this exhibit, just very preliminary, just to find out a little bit more about the artists, a little bit about more about who created this. But it was apparent to me when I saw these images together that it wasn't just imagery about food. There was another layer of information being conveyed, and I just didn't quite understand it at the time until I started delving into the history of the Chicano movement, the history of the group that created this. Fast forward to the pandemic, COVID, and the racial violence that we saw in 2019, 2020. You know, we talked a lot about essential workers and social justice and food shortages and kind of going back to basics. And that's when it hit me. That's when it dawned on me that these were the exact kind of issues that these artists were conveying in this calendar, the fight for equality, that farm workers matter, that Mexican-American history traditions are important and always have been, that pre-Columbian importance of some of these foods that have been feeding generations are something that we should look back to. And so that formed the kind of the basis of highlighting some of these images during our Food History Weekend programming, which is a annual series where we highlight lots of different topics around the subject of food. and this that year, 2020, which was just a very horrible year, but it's in relation to the Julia Child Award winner, and in that year was all about food justice, and it kind of fit the bill. They were engaging images that really hit at some of these topics that we were engaging with in that program. So that led me to do a lot more research about the artists, why they created this, the group that created it, and ultimately to the short article in Gastronomica.
That's thank you, Steve. That's such an interesting pathway. I wonder if you could tell us a bit about the images themselves. And here, I apologize to listeners. The artwork is absolutely stunning. And it's hard to convey that with just words, but there are many elements to these works of art that I hope you can help us understand, Steve. What are some of the food scenes that make up the calendario, and how would they have been perceived among activists in the Chicano movement, as well as by people within and outside of Mexican-American communities?
All right. Well, so... this was printed, like I said, 1975. It was a calendar series, so 12 images plus a cover, so 13 images, that was printed and sold as a fundraiser for a collaboration between the Royal Chicano Air Force and the Galería de la Raza, both community organizations that served Northern California. And so... these were printed a screen print, so you know you see the images with the big squeegee and you know 2, 3, 4 color tones. So they're bright colors. You know, think 70s, think kind of really interesting color schemes and designs. You know, things that convey landscape, right? Southwest, Mexico, imagery, details that convey kind of pre-Columbian themes and motifs. Images that are of that period, maybe some dress or some design elements. And so these calendars feature kind of three different registers, one main image, one small section of, you know, the dates and the days, the calendar part, and then a smaller register that's sometimes has a poem, sometimes has a recipe, sometimes has a different image. And so these were sold, like I said, as a fundraiser. I believe it was $25. And they kind of use the calendar idea because calendars were something that was very, these kinds of calendars, lots of different imagery, were often used as giveaways or sold in lots of different Mexican-American supermarkets and restaurants. And so it was kind of a common decorative and functional element in these stores and restaurants. And they, you know, often advertise. And so it was something that the artists knew intimately and drew upon. And so each image, I mean, of the 13 images, there's so many different styles. But some of the ones that I like that really kind of convey this this notion of social justice and of the Chicano movement, there's kind of three that kind of that I'll discuss or I'll talk about that kind of representative of the entire series. The cover image, I think, I find super fascinating. It's quite revealing and quite telling. And there's pinks, there's oranges, there's yellows, and there's greens. In the upper corners, there's an imagery of a Spanish conquistador, someone obviously who's European with a Spanish helmet. And then there in the other opposite corner, opposite him, is another figure that is meant to look like an Aztec warrior. It's very indigenous. You see these in kind of pre-Columbian codices. Then throughout the image, and so that right off the bat is kind of telling you about this complicated, violent history that's both intertwined and kind of really talks about this European indigenous mix right off the bat. Then we see imagery that honors the role of women kind of as tradition bearers and sustainers of community. They're preparing food. We see a woman grinding corn on a metate by hand. We see a woman preparing something with a small child. We see corn stalks and agave plants and New World melons. We see tortillas. We see these decorative elements of pyramids. And chili peppers. Clearly placing a value on tradition that kind of sustained the Mexican American community for generations. Another image is the June image, which we see a panaderia, a bakery. But the bakery was kind of the heart of the Mexican community in the Mission, San Francisco Mission District. It was a corner establishment called La Victoria. This corner store advertised community events in the windows and the doorway. We see imagery of pan dulce, tortas, cookies, baskets of plantains, and then a lovingly transcribed recipe for pastelitos de coco or coconut tarts. Those are, you know, bright greens mm-hmm. and kind of mm-hmm. bright yellows. And then in May, we see a single ear of corn. That's the main image. A maíz with the words país, raíz, maíz, country corn root in mm-hmm. the smaller register. And he titles it Para mis jefitas since the dawn of time. For my lady bosses since the dawn of time. And so that mm-hmm. That's kind of a representative sample of what we see in the image.
Wonderful. Thank you. Steve, you mentioned the Royal Chicano Air Force and La Galleria de la Raza. It's time for you to tell us more about them and, you know, how those artists and that artist collective worked to produce the calendario.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I love kind of learning about these groups. They're really telling. So these images were created, like I said, during the movimiento, during the movement, the Chicano movement, during a time of great social and political change, you know, demanding equality, representation and justice. So it was a time where Mexican Americans had little voice in politics or a few economic outlets or opportunities. Neighborhoods were full of neglect. And in art specifically, there was a lack of representation in museums. So groups took matters into their own hands. It was also a time when it was firmly bounded by the counterculture movement and the good food movement, kind of that appreciation and exploration of diversity, of a healthy mind, body, spirit awareness. And it was this context that the Rebel Chicano Art Front and the Galleria de la Raza were born. The Rebel Chicano Air Force, or RCAF, like to use humor to disarm and break down barriers, to be kind of, you know, warm and welcoming. They started out as the Rebel Chicano Art Front, and they would create images and sign them RCAF, and people would confuse them with the Royal Canadian Air Force. And so, being this kind of humorous bunch, they decided to take that and rename themselves the Royal Chicano Air Force. They created names of, general and things like that. They created a mythic origin story where they flew planes here from Aztlan, the mythic homeland of Aztlan, in Adobe airplanes. That was all in an effort to kind of break down and confront some of these issues head on in a way that was meaningful to everybody around them. And so they created this kind of after school art space, a library, an auto mechanic training space. It was born in this community for this community. And the Galleria de la Raza grew out of a cultural center from the 60s. They had artists in residence program. They created the Stay of the Dead program. That was kind of, that revived the Day of the Dead, traditions here in the United States. And so both groups were really advocates for change and really helped the community kind of help themselves, give them a voice and kind of raise issues within the city to help this community.
And this is in San Francisco or Sacramento?
I'm sorry. Yes. So the Royal Chicano Air Force was in Sacramento, and the Galleria was definitely in San Francisco.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Ithaca, helping you to plan your next getaway. Ithaca has waterfalls and wineries, art and theater, outdoor recreation, and family fun. The area is famous for its glacier-carved gorges, co-op-run businesses, and cultural influences from Cornell University and Ithaca College. Plus, you can't beat the beauty of Cayuga Lake, the largest of the Finger Lakes. Beyond 150 waterfalls and some of the region's best hiking trails, Ithaca is cider. The area is well known for its local cideries, which are leading the way in America's cider revival. You can hear from the region's cider makers directly on HRN series Hardcore. There's something really special about Ithaca's climate for cultivating delicious apples steeped in history and terroir. Let Visit Ithaca help you plan your next trip to this hub of food, drink, culture, and agritourism. Home of New York's craft cider, I love New York. Get started at visitithaca.com.
And we're back. This is Meant to Be Eaten with Paula Johnson talking with Steve Velasquez about his article, Stirring the Pot, Calendario de Comida, 1976, Chicano Art as Food Activism, available in issue 21.3 of Gastronomica, the Journal for Food Studies. You were telling us about the Movimiento and the different artist groups located in Sacramento and San Francisco. How many artists were involved?
Yeah, so both groups kind of had a core founding membership, you would say, maybe about a dozen artists. And then, of course, each group did other kinds of activities besides art. And so there were substantial programs big enough that, you know, they would seek city and state funding to keep the operations going. But it was a core group of about a dozen artists each, all with ties to, well, many of them ties to local universities and colleges, art departments. And most of them are young. Some of them use the GI Bill to go back to school. Some of them were students themselves, but they also use the space for students to learn, you know, silkscreen techniques and art techniques.
Interesting. So you spoke a little bit about the context of the 1970s in California and in the food scene writ large. I'm wondering, I think listeners may be familiar with the United Farm Workers Union and the struggle of Latino farm workers during this time. How is that struggle depicted in the calendario?
That's a very good question. So exactly, you know, this grew out of the movement. The Royal Chicano Air Force was very prolific in supporting the movement by creating posters to be used for, you know, boycotts and marches. You know, they would often print these announcements or posters or calls for action for the United Farm Workers, you know, for free. And, you know, with these images kind of underlying and underscoring the history and value of Mexican-American identity, the United Farm Worker does pop in some of these images, but not overtly, which mm-hmm. is kind of interesting. For instance, there's in the February issue, there's the UFW Eagle, which is mm-hmm. kind of based on this pre-Columbian imagery that pops up. There's in one of the small registers of the calendar, there's a Vote UFW little cartoon in there. So it pops up here and there, but, you know, farm workers, the farm worker movement, the value of farming and growing food and working the land, that's kind of evident in some of these images. But it's not overt. It's not like some of the iconic art from this period from the same groups. And so what they're doing something different here by really placing value emphasis on many different aspects of growing food, honoring tradition, you know, calling for action. So,
yeah, it's just interesting that there's the agricultural context and then this more domestic context of cooking and women cooking and feeding communities. And so I just thought that was something that you mentioned in the article that really resonated with me. So you are writing about the symbols of history and identity that make up these works. You know, tell us a little bit about that. And are those symbols as powerful today as they were when the calendario was created in 1976?
I think, you know, the symbolism, I think, really has lasted. You know, like I said, there's imagery of kind of this violence, this mixing, this mestizaje, which really values kind of both the past and the present. You know, imagery of tomato, onion, and pepper. You know, the to create, you know, for January salsa cruda. There's pre-Columbian imagery in here, taken straight from codices or based on codice images. There's value placed on knowledge of native plants. There's a humorous one about tortillas, hijos de la gran tortilla, right? Children of the great tortilla. And then there's a very beautiful, simple chili pepper as a highlight. You know, the very important food that came from the New World that has influenced just about every culture and community. There's the agave plant, right? And the artist really details different kinds of uses for this plant, which had all kinds of domestic uses, from fibers to medicines. And then, of course, it talks about politics. There's an image of the food stamp, a play on the food stamp, which is really kind of engaging head on some of the economic issues that we see. And then and you know, kind of the role of the woman in some of these images.
The one, I think it was December, showed the Chicana. And can you talk a little bit about the role of women in the activist realm?
Yeah, so it's interesting that the Chicano movement has been often criticized for the kind of the lack of representation in women in art, or kind of the lack of women in leadership positions during the movement, for stereotyping women. Only two women are featured in this series, Lorenza Campuzano and Patricia Rodriguez. But the RCAF relied heavily on women to engage with the community that they were embedded in. Lerma Barbosa, for instance, ran the Breakfast for Niños program, feeding children during breakfast time. She also ran programs centered on women's health initiatives. She ran medicinal plant workshops. She ran program called Fiesta de Maíz, which was a ceremony centered around women's health and body. And, you know, the images are pretty clear that they're honoring the role of women sustaining the family and community. So it's the contradiction may be out there in some other images, but I think it's not that evident here in this series.
Oh, interesting. Steve, are there similar collections of Chicano Latino activist art that you're studying or that you're interested in? The connection that you make between public art and social movements is so important. And I'm just wondering, is it fair to even ask you how 2021 calendario de comida might differ in terms of particular food issues, spaces, landscapes, and people?
Oh, well, you know, I think today's artivism, as I sometimes have been called, artivism, it's seen a resurgence, you know, unfortunately, because of racial politics or economics. There's this constant problem is still facing us. And so social media certainly raised awareness of some of these issues and the power of art. There's a group called Dignidad Rebelde, which is really addressing indigenous land issues and water rights, clean water, climate change, women in the field, and a whole host of other social justice causes. And so, and they're doing it in a way that, like the RCAF, is met for everyone, right? They used posters because it was cheap, but it was also something that people could relate to, right? It wasn't art in the museum. It was art in the streets, murals too. There's a group in San Francisco that's all about murals that started in the late 70s. And they're honoring community and culture and food, big, bright images. And there's, you know, artists like Esther Hernandez, who created this famous image called Sun Mad. It's a play on the Sun-Maid logo, right?
Right.
You know, she grew up in the fields and saw family and friends kind of pass because of the pesticide use, and so she created this image of a skeleton holding the basket of raisins, and she did that in 1982. Yeah. She updated it in 2008, where the skeleton is wearing a huipil, which is an indigenous blouse from Mexico. And this person, the skeletons, also has an ice wrist monitor. And so, you know, these issues don't go away, and social media has really played an important role in kind of increasing awareness. And so, we might see some of these issues again and, in a calendar, but, there are artists out there who are engaged with it. Head on.
Thank you. Steve, you mentioned that there are poems in the calendario as well. And before we have to sign off, I wonder, would you mind reading from one of the poems, one that you find particularly powerful or appealing?
Sure. Yeah, there are about three poems in here. But I know one that struck me for, you know, just for... you know, I don't know why it struck me so powerfully, but it did. And I'll read it as it is, and then I'll attempt to translate it.
Okay.
It goes, ¿Qué es la comida sino la sangre de nuestras esperanzas? ¿Qué es la comida sino el deseo de un destino sin hambre? What is food but the blood of our hope? What is food but a desire to be free from hunger?
Wow. Thank you, Steve. That is a powerful way to end this discussion. Thank you so much for joining us. Listeners can read the full article and enjoy the wonderfully complex and visually stunning artwork in Gastronomica, the Journal for Food Studies, Volume 21.3. For more details, please visit gastronomica.org.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.